Good morning. We are live here on Big Talk, College Sports with a Midwest Perspective, Blue Collar and Blue Blood. I'm Dalton Schettler. That's Sam Sprunger jamming his way in on this Friday morning. And there's a lot for us to be excited about. The crossover season of football and basketball, which is always exciting, but also unbelievably exhausting, is almost over as conference championship weekend happens in football. But still, it's exciting. We have postseason stuff on the line for football, and basketball is really getting into full swing, and we're going to dive into both here in this show.
Well, let's look at it this way. There's at least one valuable Big Ten game happening. After that, the guys that are going to opt out, they're going to make bowl season much less attractive to watch.
See, you say there's a Big Ten football game. I see two Big Ten football games. Tonight, Washington
and I was actually going to mention that earlier. Is Washington and Oregon play tonight, which is technically a Big Ten game because
it's our Big Ten light version, which actually is the better game than what the Big Ten championship game we expect to be between Michigan and Iowa.
Is there anybody in this country, period, that expects Iowa to make that a game? My buddy was showing me, he likes to do online betting, and he was showing the place that he does his bets. They literally are giving like huge amounts of boosts if you take the over 10 points for Iowa. Like, it's a huge boost. Like, if they were to hit over 10, they don't even need to win. If they hit 10 points, you get, like, triple your bet.
And I don't see a world where they get to 10.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Unless the defense scores and then sets up the offense for the other points. That's the only way I see it.
Even their defense is a bit banged up. Cooper DeJean's hurt. Like, right. I just don't really see it. Like, it's going to have to be, it would have to be something so irregularly bizarre, which I guess is why they play the game. But boy, this one feels already has a finality to it.
I think this is one of those games you could successfully say, yeah, it's going to be 75-3, you know, and you know what? We don't need to play it.
And I think, what was it when they played 2 years ago, Michigan beat them 42-3.
Yeah.
I think that was the score.
It might have been even 45-3. They only scored 3 points in the game against Michigan.
But I think we're looking at something similar again.
I honestly wouldn't be shocked if it was worse.
Yeah.
A goose egg would not shock me.
So, again, there is no real intrigue to that game. The game that does have intrigue, though, is that Washington-Oregon game, because Oregon's favored by nearly 10 points, given Michael Penix's health concerns over the last couple of weeks. And the Washington team we saw in September is not the same Washington team that exists now.
Well, and I remember telling you that I thought Washington was the best team in the country at that point. That's not the case any longer for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm curious to see how that one plays out. I think that might be the besides Bama, Georgia is going to be a great one tomorrow, but Washington, Oregon is maybe the most interesting to see who maybe moves on. If Washington wins, even though they're not playing their best lately, you can't keep out an undefeated Pac-12 champion, especially in this year's Pac-12.
Right.
If Oregon wins, they only have the one loss, and the one loss was to a peak Washington team. I think they have to get in. The playoff scenarios are going to get real interesting around this, and especially if Bama beats Georgia. Look out. All bets are off on how this plays out.
Georgia, I don't know what to do, because then you've got Texas, who's got a claim on a spot. You still have Georgia, who is the two-time defending champion.
And we'll only have one loss, and it would be to a Bama team in an Alabama title game.
The only thing they wouldn't have over Alabama is the head-to-head, and one's a conference champion and one's not.
And 2 years ago, that's how it played out, where Bama beat Georgia in that final game, and then they went to the playoffs, and Georgia just rolled everybody. So we've seen before that Georgia can lose to Bama in that game and win a national championship.
But is Georgia guaranteed a spot if they lose?
I think they are. I don't know how you keep Georgia out. I mean, if they have just one loss.
With that loss being to Alabama in the conference championship.
And the SEC isn't as strong as it normally is, but it's still the SEC. And for them to roll through 12-0 before getting to that one loss, hypothetically, I don't think you could punish them enough to drop four spots.
I still don't think that the conference championship should be weighted into whether or not a team makes it into the playoff. I really don't.
I feel like it should help you if you win, but it should not hurt you if you lose.
Because like last year, USC, now granted, whether you thought they should have been in it or not, they had to win to stay in number four after a regular season. And they got booted for a team that didn't even play in the conference championship game. And so, like, how is it that it's not a scheduled game, but it can absolutely hurt you if you don't win it?
Yeah.
And I don't know. And
the math is tricky to do, and I get it. It's all kind of awkward, but still, I think we're right theoretically that you want that to help you. You don't want to be penalized for getting there and losing. So we've bounced around a couple topics already. By the way, I think we've already finished our preview of the Big Ten football championship game. I don't have anything else to say about Iowa, Michigan. So with that being said, let's go back to what was really interesting from this past weekend, the game. Michigan beating Ohio State for a third straight year. This rivalry has flipped on its head. I mean, it's pulled a complete 180. And now there are questions, and you live in the state of Ohio. There are questions about Ryan Day that are starting to be drummed up by some Ohio State fans. Things are getting really interesting in this one.
I've got my foil hat on the hook out there to wear every time I go out, because evidently, I mean, it makes zero sense. And you know what? Each person's allowed their feeling, but I don't understand. Yes, okay, he's got, what, 7 losses in his 5 years, right?
Yep.
3 of them in a row to your biggest rival. Okay, I get it. It's frustrating. 2 of your other ones were in big game situations like, you know, playoffs. So that means he's lost 2 games other than that in 5 years. Granted, those are big portions, but still at the same time, you're winning 90+% of your games. I don't understand why you want to get rid of him. Well, we can't be our rival. Is that what you're hanging your hat on? Only rivalry games? Because you know what? You're always in contention for that CFP. Come on, kids. Let's decide which one's most important. If you can't have both, which ones do you want? Which one do you want?
Well, and that's what I wonder, how the narrative differs. If last year the kicker makes the field goal in the playoffs Ohio State beats Georgia, and then they probably roll TCU. I mean, from everything we saw, I mean, at this point, that much of the question of why TCU is able to beat Michigan is because the report of them using dummy signals and tricking Michigan for a long time. Like, that's the evidence. That's like the only most logical rationale we can point to now at this point, given what we know. But Ohio State probably would have rolled TCU, and Ohio State would be national champs, but losing to Michigan. I don't really know how you do, because I understand the game means a lot. I understand this rivalry. This is what you focus on for 365 days. I get its importance. But I do wonder if Ohio State just simply makes the field goal. Like, they had the game there. They just make the field goal. They beat Georgia. How do we talk about Ohio State and Ryan Day differently than we do right now? Because you still have 3 straight losses to Harbaugh and Michigan. But you
have a national championship there.
Like, I don't really – again, I understand everything's emotional, but I don't really know how we're supposed to dissect that with the right result.
Well, isn't it the best advice is don't make decisions when you're highly emotional?
Well, if we're talking about the game, then no decision can ever be made. That thing is always emotional.
But my point being is you don't say, okay, fire Ryan Day, the day after you wait a few weeks and go, oh, okay, you know what? He's still winning 9.2 out of every 10 games. I mean, he's still winning an absurd amount of games. Let's pump the brakes. Come on, please. And this is coming from a guy who would take 9 wins year in and year out happily. Okay. And that's not me saying, oh, look at me, I'm better than you. No, it just, 9 wins is a good amount of wins. Now, Do I get to the point if I see 9 wins over and over again? Oh boy, it sure wouldn't be nice to see 10 wins. Oh, it sure would be nice to see. Hey, let's see some college football playoff appearances. Yeah, expectations get there, but to the point where you win 92% of your games and then but lose to, okay, let's say this aspect, IU. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be upset. But if I'm constantly making appearances towards a national championship, you know, yeah, you'd like to have your cake and eat it too, but I'll take the cake.
Yeah. No, I get it. I totally get it. And so now Michigan's won 3 in a row. It's just so hard to believe just because, I mean, given what we saw where Ohio State had won every game since 2011 until that 2021 year, it'll be interesting to see what Ohio State does moving forward because, as we said, there's some talk. But I don't think – I'm with you. I don't think you can get rid of a coach that's winning more than 90% of his games.
Well, and who do you replace him with? Come on. I mean, seriously, right. who do you replace him with? You know, and Tony and I talked about, you know, possible replacements for Michigan State last week. You know, the only one that I could see is maybe, and even then, I don't know that Ohio State fans would want him. Urban Meyer's the only one that could maybe move the needle more than what Ryan Day is doing. And there's no guarantee Urban Meyer would beat Michigan.
Yeah. No, I follow. It's fascinating to me because now you have this scenario where Ohio State has to try and beat Michigan to get back on top and reclaim its throne in the Big Ten Conference. But now the playoff also expands to 12. So almost surely Ohio State is going to be in that playoff year after year after year, and you can kind of see what happens from there. But I do, again, like I said, I understand why the game means so much, and I understand why fans care about it and they're emotional about it. But I'm curious to see what that looks like moving forward. If you have nothing else on the game, I got a couple other news items I wanted to hit on. Do you have anything else on the game?
The one thing that the question I have is what was their validity behind calling that touchdown for Michigan when the Ohio State defender came up? You're watching a replay. That guy's bobbling the ball as he's crossing the goal line. Then you lose sight of the ball. Well, he's still bobbling it when you lose sight of the ball. And then when people come up, the Ohio State defender comes up with it. How do they call that a touchdown? I just don't understand how they call that a touchdown.
Yeah, and of course it's a pretty pivotal play because it's a 6-point game.
Yeah,
and so I think Ohio State fans are feeling a little snake bitten by the officials. I'm
can't
with
put yourself
you
into that position to where your one play loses the game for you though.
Yes, I think that's kind of where I land too. In terms of Big Ten football, Michigan State got its new head coach, Jonathan Smith. They hire away from Oregon State. He was introduced earlier this week.
Is their quarterback coming with him?
Well, that's where all the question marks now lead because the roster is going to be turned over a bit. All 3 of the playing quarterbacks for Michigan State this past year all hit the transfer portal. Noah Kim, Caden Hauser, Sam Levitt, they all hit the transfer portal. So there's some work to be done with that roster. There's work to be done at Michigan State long term, but here in the short term, there's some immediate roster work to be done.
Yeah.
It'll be fascinating to see what Jonathan Smith does. But it was interesting, listening to his press conference, he talked about character, values. His mantra that he shared was no ego, high output. It was a lot of the things that you would hear a Mark D'Antonio say. And I think that's what resonated with Michigan State fans as they listened to him. It was a lot of almost a younger version of a Mark D'Antonio, at least in what he had to say. And like I've said before, introductory press conferences are hard to lose, right? Everybody wins because everybody's feeling good.
Everybody's
happy.
Really excited.
Yes. But there was some actual authenticity and value to what Jonathan Smith was sharing. And I think Michigan State really hit a home run on this one. I think Michigan State, I think they got their guy. I think it follows the same formula of blue collar toughness. I value the same way that Mark D'Antonio did it for football when they took them to their golden age, the way Tom Izzo's done it in basketball. it seems to be a fit. And I think that was the most important thing in this search.
Yeah. And like I mentioned earlier, Tony and I talked about this last week, you know, who would Michigan State go after? Because there are some big names out there that they could have easily maybe, you know, gone after, tried to woo into East Lansing. But yeah, I mean, look at what this guy has done at Oregon State and look at where Oregon State's heading now. Like the reason why he was so, I'm sure it was difficult for him to make the decision to leave because he's done such good things at Oregon State, but they're a team without a home, you know, now. So I think he was going for that stability. Hey, look, I can go into the conference that I already know four of the coaches, you know, and I've coached against them for, you know, a couple of years. So he's not completely devoid of knowing what's going on in that conference, but yet he's going into he gets to rebuild to, and he has done a darn fine job at Oregon State to this point.
Yeah. And he took a program where that, I mean, in his first year had one win at Oregon State.
Right. And now they were as high as what is number 10 or 11 this year.
Yeah. So, and it's going to be a similar process in Michigan State. I mean, Michigan State is at its basement in terms of what you expect from that program right now. Sure. And so it's going to be a long-term process, but he's done it before. He's proven that he can do the rebuild. That's going to be interesting to see. But he also talked about in building his coaching staff, bringing some of the coaches with them that have been with him on this ride, and they know the language, they know his vernacular, they know what he wants. But also mixing in part of the staff that has ties to the Midwest, because Jonathan doesn't. He does not have ties to the Midwest. And so to help out with recruiting, some different things. Again, just everything at that press conference, you sat there and said, yeah, that makes sense. Like, and again, understanding it's hard to lose those press conferences, but you also don't usually get as much authenticity or value as what Jonathan Smith gave during his. And I think it really points to Michigan State getting its guy and really hitting a home run on this one.
Well, and as much as this could be a wrong state, there's not much more of a direction you can go at Michigan State other than that.
No, and it's fair. Speaking of trying to go up, another coach hired into the Big Ten, Indiana decided to get rid of head coach Tom Allen, pay a buyout of about $20 million, which I still personally, again, I'm a Tom Allen fan, so my heart hurts on this one because I think he is a great guy.
As much as I, you know, he was at IU, so I didn't like him for that aspect, but I did like him too.
Yeah, no, it's just a great guy. So that part hurts my heart, but they hit a home run too.
For sure they did.
They pull in Kurt Cignetti out of James Madison after, of course, the Dukes had just a wonderful season. And now Kurt gets hired to the Hoosiers, and it kind of sends a statement that Indiana is ready to play ball a little bit. I mean, the idea that they're going to throw money around and go get one of the hot names in the carousel, that's not typical Indiana football behavior.
No, not at all. Then normally it's one of those that they're hiring somebody as a stepping stone. They're not, I think you hit it. He would have been at the top of a bunch of people's lists that are bigger than IU.
Mm-hmm.
But IU was able to go out, intrigue him enough, and then obviously pay him enough to where this was the move he made. And you're right. Even if he uses this as a stepping stone to a bigger place, he's as unfortunate as I hate saying this. We need to watch out as Boilermaker fans because he is a really, really good coach.
James
Madison of all places.
Yeah, I was really impressed when I saw that. I did a double take. And, like, especially now in today's world where, like, you can't trust anything you see on Twitter or X or whatever. I'm, like, verifying, like, I'm pulling up other people's accounts. Yeah, that was a big slam dunk for the Hoosiers. Some other football news that we haven't really gotten to yet. Well, we also haven't really had a chance. But David Braun gets Northwestern to 7 wins this year. And
Who saw this? If anybody says, oh, we knew they were going to win 7. You are liars. You are liars. Nobody assumed or even predicted, even probably most Northwestern cover or reporters didn't see 7 wins.
I didn't think they could possibly get to 3. I mean, given the situation that was taking place there, given the roster, the talent, again, this is a team that only won one game last year, and they had to win it in Ireland against a flailing Scott Frost Nebraska team.
Yep.
I didn't think they could get to three. They're going to go bowling. They get to seven wins. David Braun, no longer the interim. He's the permanent head coach.
He didn't even accidentally get bowl eligible, Dalton. They did it by one extra.
Yeah. I mean, it was simply amazing. And I think we can say in unison, I've seen people argue because people can argue about anything. I think we can, for the most part, say in unison, he did win the Big Ten Coach of the Year award, and that's well-deserved. I don't know how it couldn't be him, given that circumstance.
I don't care. I don't care who you think in your mind should be. You're wrong. Unless it's David Braun, you're wrong, because you're absolutely right. We were looking at this season as, well, Northwestern's going to finish last in the West, and da-da-da-da-da, and we would have been not shocked if they went 0-12. Like, that's mm-hmm. how bad we thought they were going to be. And here they are, 7-4. Are you kidding? Or 7-5? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? Northwestern, who lost their coach like 6 minutes before opening kickoff. And like, it's just amazing to me what Braun has done. Yeah. There's no doubt he's Coach of the Year in the Big Ten. No doubt.
One of the arguments I saw on social media was that Jim Harbaugh should be, after taking Michigan to a 12-0 record for the second straight year. Again,
he sat out six games.
A season where he coached six games. It's David Braun. And
that's like saying Ohio State deserved to go to the Big Ten championship year or game during the COVID year. I'm not an IU fan, and I still think IU should have made it to the Big Ten championship that year.
Yeah. Other piece of news that I wanted to get to.
Yeah.
Quietly, Talia Tagovailoa became the Big Ten's all-time passing leader as he surpassed Curtis Painter this past weekend. I didn't really see like a countdown to this milestone, and just all of a sudden overnight in Piscataway, they announced Talia Tagovailoa is now the Big Ten's new king. When it comes to passing yards, that was, I guess I didn't realize he was that close, but it makes sense because he's had a tremendous career as a Terp, and tip of the hat to him.
Yeah. And I honestly, I didn't know it until you just said it. So shame on Maryland for not making this a really big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you should be, for as disappointing of a whimper of a season that Maryland ended up with, because they had a lot of looks, like it looked like they could maybe contend with Penn State, like that to have them kind of whimper out, and you know, they lost a couple of games they shouldn't have, and they looked bad doing it, and I think I'd be advertising the living daylights out of the fact that you are going to soon, and then once you do, you have the conference's all-time passing leader.
Now, and I know that news hurts you a little bit as a Purdue fan because it passes Curtis Painter, but I will let you know that Purdue responded on Twitter or X and said, hold up, he still has less yards than Drew Brees. But the technicality is the NCAA did not count bowl games back then. So officially,
so wrong.
But that's
update it then.
Yeah. Well, they didn't do it for Rod Dane at Wisconsin, and so they're
do it to him too. That's fine.
I was gonna say they probably that's fair. They probably could, but so that's the distinction. So Talia is the top passer all time because they don't count bowl games from back
then. And it's not like you can't easily go back through and see how many yards Drew Brees threw in his you're probably looking at close to 1500 more yards
mm-hmm.
for Drew Brees
if
you counted his four bowl games. I mean, shoot, he beat K-State, he beat I think he beat Oklahoma State. And it was all high scoring. Yeah, they got beat by Washington in the Rose Bowl, but he had a pretty decent game. So, I mean, you're probably looking at another 1,500 yards.
Yeah. So that's the technicality. But Still, congrats to Leah Tagovailoa. That's an incredible.
Good work. Good work, I guess. That's our asterisk.
All right. I wanted to give us time to talk basketball, both men's and women's. So I think we can turn the page on football.
Well, really quick, all of the championship games, including the two tonight, which is, what is it, whatever conference Liberty and New Mexico State are in together. But they play in but of all the conference championship games, which one's the cheapest to go to?
Oh, I don't want to look.
you've got New Mexico State and Liberty, Oregon, Washington, Oklahoma State, Texas, Miami against Toledo, Boise State, UNLV, Georgia, Alabama, SMU, Tulane, Appalachian State, Troy, Michigan, Iowa, and Louisville, Florida State. Which one's the cheapest one to go to? And I will take out, let's see, which one do you think? Let's take out the SMU Tulane game.
Okay.
Which is $7.
What were the games you read after Toledo, Miami? I need a couple of those in there.
Boise State, UNLV, Georgia, Alabama, and then I took out the SMU Tulane, Appalachian State, and Troy.
Give me the Boise State game.
You by far not the cheapest. They're playing at an Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. You can go to that game for $24 though. You know, you hit the strip, you do some gambling, and then go, oh, hey, there's a college football game going on.
I just was thinking about, like, you know, some of the fan bases in Toledo and Miami, you get Ohio teams involved.
And they're playing that they're playing that at Ford Field.
Yeah, that can't be the cheapest, is it?
$5. So
yes, what?
It is the cheapest. It is at noon tomorrow. $5 to go watch Toledo and Miami of Ohio.
I really would have thought, given that those are two Ohio teams and people are nuts for football in Ohio, that I would have been up higher. So,
and if you're really looking forward to throwing away money, it costs $41 to go watch Michigan and Iowa play.
Well, if you're a Michigan fan, you get to celebrate. So
celebrate at home.
Oh, I don't disagree, but if you're an Iowa fan, you're going to be a little disappointed, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, I think so, too. Let's move to basketball. That was just me. $336 to go see Georgia, Alabama. That's the most expensive one.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
But you could, like I said, you can go see, let's see, the cheapest of the big ones. Let's see. You're looking at Louisville and Florida State for $40. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Washington and Oregon in Las Vegas, you can go watch for $23. Did you freeze?
No.
Oh, you're just stumped.
I'm perplexed. That's a
heck of a game to go watch for $24 or $23.
That's two top six teams.
Yeah, yeah. Number three and number five.
I might need to get a plane ticket for... tonight, after I just flew back in. All right, let's switch to basketball. So we'll start with the men.
Yeah, by the way, welcome back from working in Cancun.
Thank you. I didn't really get much of a tan, did I? See, so I was working. I was out in front of the sun.
I saw the bucket hat.
Oh, nothing like a bucket hat on vacation. Nothing like a bucket.
That is the telltale I'm on vacation.
Yep. It sends a message. It sets the tone right away. But let's switch to basketball. So for men's basketball, and we actually had somebody write in a couple weeks ago, the last time I was on, and they wanted to get to some of the other teams. So we will.
We talked a little bit about it last week.
Last week.
We can get into it a little bit more.
Yeah, we will. But I do want to start with, again, Purdue's now number one in the country. It's the third straight year they've hit number one. I promise we won't talk about Purdue the entire time, but it is worth mentioning. And, I mean, we're dangerously close to Purdue being the only team ranked. Illinois squeaked into the top 25 at number 24. But Purdue has been, at this point, has said it last time, but they've been overwhelming. And what they showed in the Maui Invitational is just straight-up dominance. So Purdue still just checking all the boxes early on.
Number 11, number 7, and number 4 at the time that they were playing. That's a heck of a lineup. You know, I saw someone say, you know, Purdue just won the most stacked Maui tournament ever.
Yeah.
Let that soak in. You know,
yep.
They had four of the top seven teams in the country, and Purdue came out on top. That's that to me is what makes me excited. It's not necessarily, oh, it's just going to happen again, what happened last year. I think they've gotten a lot better. And that's scary to think that they've gotten a lot better compared to what they were last year.
They've gotten better, but I'll go back to the idea of mixing Lance Jones in.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Huge.
It adds a different dynamic to this team. So even if you find a way to fluster the guards, even if you find a way to keep the ball away from Zach Edey, like a la what Fairleigh Dickinson did last year. I mean, they swarmed Zach Edey. They disrupted the guards in the backcourt. Lance Jones is the tiebreaker in all of that. Lance Jones will change a game in those situations. Mm-hmm. I mean, Purdue is so multidimensional now where they weren't. That was the weakness. It was solid. It was well proven. Right. You get the ball to Zach Edey, spread it out with shooters. But now you add in this athleticism variable, and Purdue's ceiling changes a bit because they can weather more storms throughout a tournament because they are multidimensional.
Well, it doesn't require Zach Edey to get a shot away at the hoop now. You can give the ball to Lance Jones. He can penetrate and get to the basket. Even if he doesn't make it, you've got a 7-4 guy that can go try and rebound. So you've got an advantage there. Braden Smith is 100% different. He's a different guard this year, but he still can't create his own shot like Jones can. Jones can get to the hoop clearly just on his athleticism. Braden Smith is just a good point guard.
And what Jones gives you on defense too cannot be understated here. I mean, that's one of the best two-way guards that the Big Ten's going to have throughout the entire season. You mentioned Braden Smith. He nearly had a triple-double in the last win for Purdue. I mean, they're just clicking on all cylinders. They're deserving of the number one position in the country, and I think the sky's the limit for Purdue.
The last thing I will say about Purdue to this point is, you know, the criticism last year was you've got freshman guards. You and I have said, you know, the biggest, you know, Tom Izzo's even said the biggest transition is from freshman to sophomore. Braden Smith has improved immensely compared to what he was last year.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people saying that he's playing now on an all Big Ten level. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, the Big Ten needs to watch out, because if he's improved that much, he's not going to make some of the silly freshman mistakes that he made a lot last year.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. If we look at other Big Ten teams, I mean, obviously the only other one ranked right now is Illinois. The Illini, I think, are 7-1. As of this moment, if memory serves right,
it says 5-1.
5-1. Okay, I'm mixing them up with somebody else. Then I've looked at so many records, so
there
that's
are only
possible.
Two
so
teams in the Big Ten, Dalton, that have 7 wins. Purdue is one of them.
Who's the other?
You don't know? Oh, we
is
had the
Ohio State.
No, it is not. Let's play. We played this last week with Tony. It was the same team. It is not Ohio State. Ohio State's 6-1. Don't look at the standings.
I'm not. I'm looking aimlessly around the room. I'm looking at an elf calendar that's now December. Who else has 7 wins? Wisconsin? Iowa?
Wisconsin's 5-2. Iowa's 5-2. This team is also undefeated, Dalton. There's only 2 undefeated teams in the Big Ten.
What am I missing?
You just want the answer?
It's not Maryland. Maryland's struggling. I want to get to Maryland in a minute. Who is it? K-State. Nebraska?
Nebraska is 7-0.
I have not gotten to watch any Nebraska ball to start this year, so that completely gives me off guard.
Nebraska
ball. Yeah, they label themselves as that sometimes. I love that as a brand.
That is a great branding. But yeah, Nebraska ball. The Cornhuskers are sitting atop the Big Ten, technically right now, because of being alphabetical. They are number one in the Big Ten right now.
Wow. Okay.
Purdue.
I need to get in front of a TV and watch the Tominaga show roll on here in 2023.
Hey, you know what? It's a big game. You know, big game in town when you're in Lincoln.
I got to see who they've played, but okay, let's start off.
Not anybody big. Their next game, their biggest game is their next one against Creighton.
Okay, that's actually a solid game. Yeah, but let's go back to Illinois then for a moment, because they are second highest in the Big Ten. Their only loss was to Marquette, and they didn't lose it by much. And, of course, in the exhibition season, we've talked about before that Illinois actually beat number one Kansas. Again, it's an exhibition. Doesn't count. But they showed you they can hang with the big boys. And, again, they pushed Marquette pretty close. Marquette's dang good this year.
Yeah.
They have some electric scoring still in Terrence Shannon Jr. He's averaging right around 20 points a game. Dane Danger looks to be giving him quite the lift down low. And then you have that's a fun name to play with. Luke Goody, the Fort Wayne native, is hitting threes at a pretty high rate. I think he's shooting around 43% from deep. But Illinois is able to put the pieces together. And, again, I think it goes back to what we saw in that Kansas game where Ty Rogers was running the point. That was one of the big question marks heading into it. You're like, there isn't maybe a true point guard, and Ty Rogers just stepped up to the plate. Illinois looks good to start.
To start, you know, and I know that we said it would potentially beat Illinois and then Maryland, and I know we're going to talk about them as well here shortly. But, you know, them and Maryland were kind of going to fight over the third spot. I'm still not worried about Michigan State. They're going to improve, and they're going to be right up there exactly in my thought, exactly where everybody assumed they were going to be, up right up there, snug right up under Purdue. Honestly, I could see Illinois maybe upsetting the apple cart a little bit because they had those question marks in place. And that was much like last year. Them and IU were default 1 and 2 because we didn't know what any other team had.
Yeah.
Now this year, they're kind of number 3 by default because we don't know who's going to answer those questions for them. And now they're starting to filter out a little bit to where we kind of have an idea. So therefore, maybe Illinois is the number 3 team, or have, you know, maybe even the second best if Michigan State doesn't right their wrongs.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And I know we talk Michigan State a bit, but I do believe by the end of the year, Michigan State's going to be okay, and they're going to be number 2. But I believe there's some frustration because they're not as far along as you would want them to be, especially considering how many upperclassmen they have that they rely on. So for right now, it's not the product necessarily you want to see, but I mean, they have the pieces. The pieces are absolutely there. I don't think there's not a question in my mind about the talent that is there that exists with that Michigan State roster. It's just about when will things start to click, and that's kind of unpredictable how long that will take. But once it does, I think Michigan State is absolutely the second best team right now in the Big Ten.
So Northwestern's sitting right now at 5-1. They're 5-1. They play Purdue tonight. If they win that game tonight, are we looking at them as potentially being a shocker to the conference?
They were last year. What I'm curious of, and again, Northwestern's another team I haven't gotten to see yet.
They haven't really beaten anybody, though.
Between football, men's basketball, women's basketball, I'm drowning over here, okay?
Sure.
But I haven't watched a ton of Northwestern, but I can tell you heading into the year, I was curious because the way they got it done last year, where they put off that great run, was defense. Mm-hmm, right. And it was led by Chase Audige. Audige really kind of flipped things around. I mean, I suppose I should say when I say led by, one of their assistant coaches came in, and he's the one who really led the charge,
right,
macro level and from the vision. But Chase Audige was the one that was disrupting so much. I'm curious, without Chase Audige this year, how does Northwestern's defense fare against some of these Big Ten teams? I mean, they still have Boo Booey running the point. So offensively, I'm not terribly concerned about a huge drop-off. But defensively, Chase Audige was that guy. I'm curious how they're able to defend some of these teams.
Yeah, because, I mean, like I said, they haven't beaten anybody really great yet. But the Binghamton, Dayton, Western Michigan, Rhode Island, and Northern Illinois are their 5 wins. They lost to Mississippi State. So, I mean, are they a product of what their schedule is at this point? Are they 5-1 because they haven't really played anybody yet and they're going to, you know, kind of fall back to 500-ish. I don't know, but like Purdue struggles when they go to Northwestern for whatever apparent reason, and they have since my whole entire life.
Because Chris Collins is a really good coach. Well, maybe not to that point, but Chris Collins is a dang good coach, and I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I agree. I, I, it's hard to believe that he was on the hot seat last year.
Yeah.
You know, before the season started, they're like, he's got to figure it out or he may be gone. And here he is, you know, he ended up finishing second in the Big Ten and got him coach of the year. And absolutely, yeah, he's a darn fine coach. And my question is he happy where he's at, or is he going to at any point decide, you know what, I might go somewhere else? Is there another program that would entice him to leave?
I mean, it's fair. I don't understand. So Chris Collins now has taken Northwestern to its only two NCAA tournament appearances in its entire history.
Collins Arena?
Yeah, like, I mean, honest to goodness, like, instead of hot seat talk, we should be talking about a statue for the man. Like, I'm kind of curious because, I mean, it kind of keeps along this momentum. Like, his legacy will be as the Northwestern basketball guy. I mean, that absolutely is on the table.
You know what the kicker is? He's taken him to two tournaments, and he has a 500 record. He's 2-2.
Yeah.
He's won a game each time that he's been there, and he should have beaten Gonzaga that first time they won.
Oh, yeah. And they ended up going to the title game. That was a bizarre sequence.
Yeah.
So who all? We talked about Illinois. We talked about Northwestern. We talked Michigan State. We've talked Purdue. How about a team that I thought might have something to it and now is really starting to impress? Ohio State. Ohio State right now, between the production they're getting on the top end, this backcourt is really, really strong. I think the top two scorers are averaging like 33 points combined, if I have it right. I'm going to pull that up now. But Ohio State has really been able to play pretty well, led by Roddy.
Did you break? Where you at? Oh, there you are. Whew,
sorry.
Yeah, no, Roddy Gale Jr. is
yes.
Is their guy. And now they just lost to what? Texas A&M here recently,
which that's a ranked team though, yeah, and they have A&M ranked win.
Yeah.
Who did they beat that was ranked? Alabama. They beat Alabama 92-81. Bruce Thornton's averaging 18 a game. Roddy Gale Jr.'s averaging 14.5 a game. So yeah, that's about 35 points
against
a game.
Texas A&M was a close game. I mean, it was only a 7-point loss, and
you
say, well, 7 points, that's more than two possessions. Well, you got to remember there's the fouling at the end always is a lovely, lovely time that, you know, let's slow it down and make it impossible to get a game in, you know, 2 hours. But, you know, yeah, and that's – Ohio State was one that I wasn't sure, especially after last season, losing Sensabaugh, and after last season of where they, what, lost like 13 in a row at one point, I think it was.
Yeah.
It just, it makes you wonder, did they correct it? Was that an anomaly? Was that an anomaly of what they could have been? Like, could they have been something completely and utterly different? Absolutely. But is that going to carry over to this year? And so far it hasn't. But I'm interested to see what all they're going to do. Are they going to be able to carry that over? I mean, they've got Minnesota next. That's not going to be a big game for them. But they play UCLA here coming up. Then they've got West Virginia, and then they start the Big Ten in flux, you know. And do they have enough to maintain this 6-1 on a macro scale? I don't know.
Well, and you say Minnesota's maybe not a big test, but it is a big battle. It's a battle of battle. Jameson Battle will be taking on his former team. You enjoyed that one. I almost got a spit take out of you.
You almost got it.
Jameson Battle, who, by the way, is also having a pretty good season in Columbus. He's averaging about 12 points a game. Zed Key's averaging 10 points a game for Ohio State. And I think the influx of them. But again, we knew Thornton was going to be really good. I think that's something fair that we could say. We knew Thornton was going to be good. For Roddy Gale to take this jump from freshman to sophomore year where he's averaging 14 points a game, I think that's one of the difference makers that kind of pivots this team's potential. And, now they get ready to take on a Minnesota team. Go ahead.
I tell you what, Battle moving into there, he's averaging almost 13 or 12.5 points a game. And to insert that into your lineup, coming from, you know, don't get me wrong, Sensabaugh is a big, you're not, he's a generational talent when it comes to being on a roster, but to be able to replace that with something like Battle to, you know, ease the pain, I guess, and maybe even boost in different areas that make you a little bit more threatening. You know, this could be a very interesting season to see where Ohio State ends up by the end of the season.
And it brings you some of that upperclassmen experience that is needed, because Ohio State at times has been able to get that in forms of like a Kyle Young and some of the different players. Yeah. This roster kind of needed a piece of that. And he and Zed Key's been around for a while. They can kind of offer that from their spots. A couple of teams that maybe aren't playing as well as we expected them to before we moved to women's basketball. Maryland's 4-3. They lost three games in a row, pretty close. But given what that team has with Julian Reese, Jameer Young, Dante Scott, we expected a lot more from the Terps. And so far, they don't quite have it clicking on all cylinders either.
Well, and if you look at who they lost to, don't get me wrong, Villanova, 21st in the country. That's one. But they lost to Davidson and UAB. Now, they're both by 3 points.
Yep.
But those are teams you should be winning by double digits at this point in the season. You know, you should be winning those, and that's the problem. Let's say the little bit of a red flag is they're losing to teams they shouldn't lose to right now.
Yeah.
Can Kevin Willard get them to turn around and turn into what they are expected? You know, I mean, they've got, they've got IU coming up tonight. Then they've got Penn State. And then they get a couple games or 4 games. But they've got UCLA in there. They've got some competition that are really going to make them show what they've got. And I don't know if they're going to be able to. I mean, don't get me wrong. I still think they're going to be really, really good. But I just don't know. They've got to turn it around relatively quickly, because if it gets away from them too quickly, we saw what happened to Ohio State last year.
Well, and we talked about, like, with Michigan State, for example, what they have on the horizon is so much more than what they have right now. But they're kind of in their own way in some respects and need to try and figure themselves out. Maryland, to a lesser level in terms of its overall potential, kind of along the same path. We did get a comment a couple weeks ago in talking about teams, and I feel bad for the listener, because since the 2 weeks, Michigan's season has turned around the other way. Michigan was playing really well when we got a comment asking about talking about the Michigan Wolverines. Since, they have really started to struggle, and it really is on the defensive end of the floor. They are having a hard time stopping anybody.
Well, yeah, even the game they won, they gave up 78 points to Stanford.
Since then.
I mean, and we talked a little bit, excuse me, a little bit about that last week when you were out, and the fact that they had lost to Long Beach State, gave up 94 points to Long Beach State, and then held Memphis to 71, but could only muster 67, you know? So, and we also made the comment that thank goodness there wasn't a fight between the coaches. Yeah, that's the big thing is now, you know, they lost to Texas Tech. They gave up 73, but they only put together 57. So they've got a lot of figuring out. Now, my question to you is what I posed to Tony is this the end of the line for Juwan Howard if he doesn't come through with something worthwhile this year for Michigan?
I understand the nature of the question. I only would say I'm uncomfortable answering just because he just went through the medical thing, and I think it makes it hard to evaluate it in this moment.
Yeah, okay.
A couple months removed, I think I'd be more comfortable talking. But you know what I mean? Like, given how absent he was, I feel like it's hard to maybe end up calling for somebody's job in the process.
Right. I just know that, you know, he underachieved the past 2 years.
No argument.
3 years prior to that, where, you know, if health wise everything comes through and he's fine for the rest of the season health wise, if he doesn't produce, is he back?
I was going to say, how about this? If we remove the health thing, like if that wasn't a current circumstance, I think I might be with you. He won the Big Ten championship in the COVID year, so that was the 2020-21 season. But you can make the argument that was with a lot of John Beilein's guys, because Beilein was just 2 years removed at that point. That was Howard's second year.
Right.
Besides bringing in a transfer point guard, a lot of it was still a lot of what Beilein had left over. And since then, things have kind of dipped down. And of course, Hunter Dickinson transferred out of the program this past offseason to go to Kansas. So I'm with you. Like, I think there is a conversation to be had there. I'm just curious to see what they do for the next few weeks. Maybe they can turn things around defensively, but we'll see. I do want to get to women's basketball, and I know we're starting to run out of time. Right. You mentioned Maryland and Indiana will tip at 7. Want to mention real quick, we haven't gotten to talk about the Hoosiers. Khalil Ware, the Oregon transfer, is averaging 18 points and 9 rebounds a game. That's a big one to watch tonight. Yeah, that tips at 7. Purdue and Northwestern, you mentioned, will be tipping off at 9. All right, so real quick, we got, what, maybe 5 minutes. Let's talk a little Big Ten women's basketball. Indiana has a turnaround in Maine. They were down at halftime, but in the Mackenzie Holmes homecoming return for her out to Maine, the Hoosiers are able to pull together in the second half. They get the win. But certainly there was a moment where we were all kind of looking at our phones like, is this really happening to Indiana?
This isn't March. We shouldn't have upsets like this.
outside of Indiana, Maryland is still trying to figure itself out a little bit. Of course, they play every tough team in the country, so you can't knock them for that. They play South Carolina. They played UConn. They lost those, but then they went down to the Cancun Challenge and lost to Washington State in its first game. We're trailing in the second, had to come from behind to win that one. And now for the first time in, I think, 13 years, Maryland's not ranked, which is unbelievable
to me. Because yeah. I think it was well, when we were previewing, you know, Maryland was ranked, and you're like, they've been in every poll for like 11 years. I'm like, no way. That is mind boggling. And now they're not ranked, and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious to see what they end up doing the rest of the way. Iowa, I have not watched since they had that one loss to, I believe, Kansas State. They're 7-1 now. They're fourth in the country. Caitlin Clark is phenomenal, as always. In that game, she was ice cold. And I think they still have to figure out some of the other roles for some of the other players. Again, Monica Sonato, she scored over 2,000 points in her Hawkeye career. And she's gone now. And somebody's got to pick up those pieces. Are you volunteering to pick up the pieces, or why is your hand up?
No, I've got a question, because this is really odd for me to see. So, Iowa, part of the Big Ten, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at their regular season. Have they played Kansas State twice?
Have they?
Because it says they lost 65-58, and then their last game they beat Kansas State, number 16 in the country, 77-70.
All right, let's look into this. So November,
that has to be from like a tournament, right? A preseason tournament of some sort.
Yeah, they played them down in Florida in a preseason tournament. How about that? Okay,
and
so
then, and then they had them scheduled as a scheduled game. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of rare to see.
Well, especially in the first, what, 8 games of your season, you've seen one team twice.
Yeah. So they avenged their loss. Like I said, I haven't seen them play since that Kansas State loss. But I think in that game, Caitlin Clark got 32 shots up, and the rest of the team, I think, had 29. Like, she had more than half the team shots. And you could just tell in those final moments, everybody was
32.
Like, yeah, you could tell in those final moments, everybody was like, where's Caitlin? Find Caitlin.
Yeah,
like,
right.
There's still some of that stuff to be worked out for Iowa. We talked a little bit about Indiana. They're a 5-1. I really like Indiana's team. I don't think it's fully gelled yet. This is not like mid-season form for the Hoosiers. But when you mix in Mackenzie Holmes and how great she is with Chloe Moore McNeil and Yarden Garzone, I think Yarden Garzone is going to have a big year for the Hoosiers. Ohio State 16th in the country. They're at 5-1. That one loss was to a top 10 USC team. So Ohio State still looks really good. I think the Buckeyes actually could make a push maybe to win the Big Ten Conference this year. And then outside of that, receiving votes is Penn State. Penn State is actually 7-1 now. And here at the start of the year, I mean, we've seen some great play from McKenna Marisa. She's averaging, I think, like 18 points a game. Chesky scoring in double figures. And they got Ashley Owusu back at Penn State. She transferred in this offseason. Things seem to be clicking for the most part there in Happy Valley. And Carolyn Krieger's got this squad off to a pretty hot start, which is something to watch for. Wasn't really expecting Penn State to be amongst maybe one of the best in the Big Ten heading into this year. Not that you expect them to be bad, but the Big Ten's coming off of a year where it was historically great. It's the greatest year in its history. And so for Penn State to make this rise, it's pretty impressive.
And I can remember now, this is aging me because it was prior to Penn State joining the Big Ten. I can remember Penn State being a good college, women's college basketball program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were not on the level of Louisiana Tech and Tennessee, but they were always kind of involved in, you know, in the top 25. And even after they joined the Big Ten, they started out as one of the premier teams in the conference, much like, you know, how Maryland kind of stepped in and all of a sudden they were, you know, one of the better teams in the conference when they came in. That was Penn State too. So to see them coming back at least to 7-1 now, and maybe being a highly competitive, maybe not winning the Big Ten or anything, but highly competitive, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Good for them. And I'm glad.
I'll save best for last as we get ready to close this one out. Michigan State women's basketball. The Spartans are off to a 6-1 start under first-year head coach Robin Fralick. Folks, if you have not taken in one of these games, do so. This team heading into last night against DePaul was scoring 93 points per game. The non-conference before heading to Cancun was a little on the softer side, and they took advantage of it. I mean, they hit 100 twice during those four games. They went down to Cancun. They took on a James Madison team where Michigan State was a little thin on the front court. James Madison, the fifth best rebounding team in the country. And Michigan State out-rebounded James Madison by 12, won the game 95-69, and then lost the next day to Creighton, which Creighton, by the way, is a good team. That team is going to get back into the top 25 real soon. That is a solid team led by Jim Flannery that has, you know, a system built in place. He's in his 22nd year there. But so 5-1 Michigan State is heading into last night in Chicago, where they go for their first true road game to take on DePaul. A lot of ways this is a similar matchup. Like, both these teams play the exact same way. They like to play flat, fast. They like to get out and run, create turnovers, go. This was one that was anticipated to be a dogfight. Like, really, this felt like a coin flip kind of game. Like, you really didn't know how this one was going to go beforehand just because they're so similar. DePaul's got a ton of talent. They have the Big East second leading scorer. Like, DePaul's a good team.
Uh-huh.
Michigan State won 102-64.
38 points, buddy.
102 points Michigan State poured on last night. And so now that scoring average goes even higher. And for Michigan State women's basketball, the Spartans are number one in the country in three-point field goal percentage and number two in how many threes they make per game. They went into last night making 11 threes a game. And last night they made 14. They made 14 threes last night. So they might be number one in both categories now, but this perimeter onslaught is something to be reckoned with. And look, you know, you get to the Big Ten, and this, again, Robin Fraley's just in her first year. It's not the biggest roster, and there's not a ton of size. But given how they're shooting the ball, Michigan State's going to be able to play with some people, as evidence of last night. DePaul's a good team, right, and Michigan State ran them out the gym. I guess this is something to pay attention to in East Lansing, folks. Michigan State women's basketball is cooking something up here early on in the Robin Fralick era. And jump on the bandwagon while you can, because this is going to be a hot ticket to get.
Well, 6-1. That last year, was, you know, wins weren't didn't come as nicely and as cleanly and as quickly as they have this point this season. So that's always a good way to look at it is, you know, all the way up to the top, baby. Let's disrupt the apple cart. Hey, you know what? Yeah. Let's beat Iowa instead of, you know, going to overtime and letting Caitlin Clark shoot 38,000
Free throws. Oh my God. Yeah. Get game out of my memory forever. Okay. But yeah, so glad we were able to talk a little women's basketball.
Absolutely.
We'll be able to hear shortly with football getting to the playoffs. We'll be fully focused on basketball, both men and women, yes, for the most part. But that'll do it for today. Sam, where can everybody find us?
All right. You can go to the TikToks, the Instagrams, and the platform formerly known as the Twitter, and find us at B1G underscore talk. That's B1G underscore talk, Dalton, not B-I-G. So B1G underscore talk. Go to Facebook and it's B1G talk, big talk, not all big talk, Dalton. Don't look at the all, just big talk. Yes. And then we are streamed weekly on the ASAP network. You can find us there. If you miss the stream, you can find the audio podcast through Lounge Media Group later that day. But if you have to watch us, which that's fine, and we're okay with that, you need to go to Spotify where our video is also uploaded for your perusal.
Awesome. Well, make sure you check us out all those places. And again, a big thank you to all of you for tuning in and joining us. Always appreciate you guys tuning in, writing comments. Please continue to do so. But on behalf of my partner, Sam Sprunger there, I'm Dalton Shetler. And until next time, so long.
See ya.